ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 135 and the first episode of 2024. My name is Cooper Chapman and I'm so pleased you're here today because today's episode is a really special one with so much great information, a really inspiring story, and yeah, just a good way to kick off your 2024. If it's your first time tuning into this podcast, thank you so much for checking it out. I have been doing this for quite some time now. We're about 3 years in. We've got close to 700,000 downloads on this podcast with so many incredible guests to look back on, over 134 guests. So go back, check out some of the other catalog. There's some really, really special conversations with a lot of value to be had. So go through the list, have a look for a topic that might interest you and listen to somebody else's story after you listen to this episode today with Rory Warnock. Also, if you want to learn a bit more about the Good Human Factory, head over to thegoodhumanfactory.com. It's a mental health organization where I run keynotes for high school groups, also corporate groups. We've worked with companies like Apple, McDonald's, Telstra, Amazon, Red Bull over the past couple of years. And yeah, I've had some really incredible feedback. So if you want to learn more about the workshops that I run, you want to learn a bit more about the podcast and a bit more just about what the Good Human Factory is, head over to thegoodhumanfactory.com. Also over there, you can find the merchandise that I do. I've been working really hard on this over the last couple of years to try and create garments that are going to start conversations, that are going to actually make a big impact in your life. So head over to the website, check out the merch, use the code podcast. You can get a big 25% off. And I've got a new challenge for the community because that's what the Good Human Factory is all about, building community and connecting curious minds with simple mental health strategies. So if you see anybody wearing the shirt, or if you buy a shirt and anybody comes up to you, make sure you tell them what you're grateful for. We want to turn this into a bit of a challenge within the community. So if you see somebody wearing a Good Human Factory shirt somewhere out in the wild, tap them on the shoulder and ask them what they're grateful for. It's going to start a positive conversation for both you and the person who you ask. Also, a big thank you to our sponsors, Drink Arepa, the brain drink from over in New Zealand. These absolute legends have been sponsoring this podcast for a long time. They're also big supporters of Rory and the work he does. We do a bunch of work together, so it's so awesome to have them sponsoring this episode. If you want to learn more about the brain drink, the neuroscience that's gone into it, the effects it's going to have on both your short-term performance and your long-term brain health, head over to their website, drinkarepa.com, use the code Good Human, a massive 25% off with that code. And yeah, you can learn all about the science over there. I use this stuff every single day. Instead of having a second coffee, I drink the performance drink. Gets me super focused and good clarity throughout my mind throughout the day. So go check that out. Would love to know what you think. Okay, one last thing actually. This Wednesday, a few days ago, we put out our first 1% podcast for the year. So the 1% podcast is all based around giving 1% of your day to your mental health. I read out some gratitudes from the incredible people in the 1% Good Club, Instagram accountability groups, doing 10 minutes of meditation every morning, 4 minutes of gratitude each night, and keeping each other accountable. So head over to the Wednesday episodes, listen to the 1% pod, and yeah, I'm sure you're going to really like being part of that community as well. Okay, today's episode, Rory Warnock, far out. This guy has got an incredible story to tell. Breathwork expert, ultra marathon runner, and just a guy who has so much knowledge to share. So Rory grew up over in the UK in Scotland and had a pretty interesting upbringing. A bunch of brothers, stepbrothers, and yeah, didn't really fit in, he felt, at school. He had a bit of trouble learning and yeah, found himself a bit lost. He then took a gap year and came to Australia when he was 18 and did a PT course and really fell in love with Australia, went back to the UK, and then he studied sports science at university and just really got to learn about the brain, about the body, and just how things work. From there, he went and worked for a coconut water company, got into the corporate world, but didn't really like it. And while he was in university, he found himself struggling quite a bit with his mental health, a bit of depression, anxiety, was put straight on antidepressants from a GP, and just didn't really like the way it felt. And it took him a while, but he found a few other things that really helped him with his mental health and to get himself back into that healthy, happy place that we all want to be. He then found breath work and, yeah, his life changed forever. In 2020, when COVID hit, Rory went and with his partner at the time and moved to Australia, where he just has been ever since. And he's just been really growing his breathwork business and, yeah, helping so many people. He's worked with companies like Google, KPMG, LinkedIn, and just shared his experience, his knowledge, and the power of breath with so many people and really given them so many benefits. So I'm sure you guys are going to really love this episode. He's also an ultra marathon runner. He's done 250-kilometer race over in Peru, a multiple different 100-kilometer races. And if you listen carefully, towards the end of this episode, I actually announce a big challenge that I'm taking on, which is going to be a 100-kilometer race in the Blue Mountains later this year in May. So keep an ear out for the journey of that with myself. But let's jump into today's episode with Rory Warnock. If you do enjoy the episode, one last thing, do me a favor, share it on your Instagram story, tag both myself and Rory. I would love to see what you think of the episode. Leave us a little review if you listen on Apple. Leave us 5 stars if you listen on Apple or Spotify. And most importantly, just hit that like or subscribe button. It really helps us move up the ratings and it just really helps us get more people listening to the podcast if you guys can share it with friends. So thanks so much for the support. I love you all. I can't wait to bring you the best year yet of Good Humans Podcast. Let's jump into today's episode. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Rory Warnock. How you going, mate?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. It's been quite the fun morning. We've hosted together a mindful morning with Drink a Repper, a brand who has been a podcast sponsor for quite some time here. They work closely with you as well, the brain drink. You work in breath work and are all about trying to make people perform better. So I guess we'll open the podcast with a rapid cheers. Have a quick little sip. Big thanks to these guys for continually supporting both of us.
Cheers.
And we're going to get into this chat. But man, the first thing I open all my podcasts with is, what are you grateful for in life right now?
What am I grateful for in life right now? I'm grateful for a lot of things. I think that's my pause of thought. I'm grateful to be in Australia. I love this country. I've been here now coming up to, over 4 years. I think it's 100% one of the best countries in the world. Even just being up here for the first time, seeing you in Gold Coast, you know, the vast coasts and beaches, is just amazing. So, you know, growing up in Edinburgh in Scotland, it wasn't really the way I grew up. So being able to live somewhere like this, I think it's incredible.
Mate, it's very lucky to be here. I forgot that this is the first time on the Gold. We just went for a nice swim out the front of my house. It makes more sense now why you're so fascinated by how nice where I live is, because it's like a bit different to Scotland here.
Yeah, for everyone listening, I've been taking photos of everything like a tourist, and Coops is like, what are you doing, mate?
No, it's been really fun, but we've known each other. I didn't realize that you only got here 4 years ago, because we met 3 years ago. So I guess I'll set the scene how we know each other, and then we've had like a pretty cool story where we've continued to cross paths in different ways. But back in 2020, I was hit up by a few guys. I've got a mind blank. The name Genoa and Blake, and they did a thing called Momentum, which was like a men's activation 10-week course of, or might have been 3-month course, where you kind of did all different things and caught up once a week. And I was invited to do it for free with them, to be involved and to just check out what they were doing. And you were also there, one of the people who was on the Zoom calls, and we all like to kind of share a bit about ourselves. And to be honest, I kind of almost forgot you're in it, because about a year and a half after we finished it, how did we connect the next time? No, you reached out to me. You DM'd me and said something like, we should catch up. It sounds like we're
doing... The dirty little girl that I am DMing you.
Oh, no, I love it. But then we caught up in Bondi and had like a coffee, went out and got some lunch. And yeah, I've kind of been mates since, I guess. Just social media mates, and now you're blowing up with your breath work. And yeah, I'm fascinated to hear how the story got to here.
Well, I think with...
Yeah, what's your experience of our friendship along that journey too?
Yeah, I think both of us doing Momentum and that men's mentorship program, you know, there's going to be an alignment with a lot of the guys on that call, on that course. And then I kept an eye on what you're doing, and there's not many people who are doing what you and I do. You know, there's not many people in Australia who are pushing or supporting humans with gratitude, you know, where I'm pushing and supporting humans through breathing. You know, they're two very niche, specific, independent areas of health. So I've always admired what you've been doing from afar and checking it out. And I think just over the past, I guess, more over the past 18 months, we've just been crossing paths more and more and more. And then obviously now both working with and supporting Arepa for so many reasons. you know, now we're actually doing stuff together, which is fun.
Yeah, I know, it's so cool. We did that mindful morning this morning. I did some gratitude and mindfulness. You took everyone through some breath work, and it was a great session. It's fun working together. We're both the same age. And like you said, just both trying to, I guess, chase after it in the world while also make the world a better place, which is generally something that I see a lot of people get to their sort of late 30s, early 40s, or that next chapter of life, and realize, oh, life isn't all about making money and this. It's about giving back and service. And I feel like we're very lucky that we've fallen into something. Well, not fallen into something, by design, put ourselves into a place because we recognize that helping people makes us feel good. So it's lovely to align with people that are very similar. But this chat's going to be fun. I told you before, we just went and did Riggs Recovery. We had a nice ice bath. We had a little warm time in the steam room, and we're feeling good. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for this chat. And that's why I love these chats, because I can rewind back and get to know your story for who you are. You said you've been on quite a few podcasts talking about the incredible work you do with breath work and teaching people how to breathe better. But you said not many people have asked you about your upbringing, and that's where I'm going to come in. So let's rewind back to the start. What do I need to know about Rory up until you went to high school? That might give me a bit of an idea to shape who you were as a young kid, siblings, family life, whatever you're willing to share.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's a, no, like I said, I've spoken to quite a few people in other podcasts, and no one has ever asked me about my background and upbringing. So it's a very unique question, which I do quite like. Well, I guess when I was 3 or 4, my parents divorced. So parents divorced. I have one full brother with mum and dad, 2 stepbrothers, 2 half-brothers. So, you know, there's 6 boys in my family, which naturally brings a bit of indirect or direct competitiveness, as men often with boys and men often does. I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety when I was about 21, 22. But if we rewind a little bit, at school, I really struggled at school with dyslexia. So I struggled with, I guess, understanding my purpose and what I was passionate about at school. I didn't really know what I was going to do. When I left school, I didn't even apply for university. I went to private school. I was brought up in a very supportive home, but I didn't know what I was going to do when I left school. So I came traveling. I actually came to Australia when I was 18.
Nice.
Traveled around, did my personal training certifications in Sydney, then just traveled a bit of Philippines and Bali and Fiji, Cook Islands. Then, whilst on my travels and on my gap year, my year away, I then applied for university, went to university in London, studied strength and conditioning science.
Okay.
So I guess I've always been interested in sport and human development, but I never really knew where that could take me, because mm-hmm. all my family worked in, you know, my dad was in finance, my stepdad was in finance, my uncle's in finance. So that's all I ever really knew in my upbringing or my conditioning. Then, you know, like I mentioned with the depression and anxiety, you know, I often find that through crisis, growth can be found.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a low moment for me for about maybe 3 or 4 years. You know, for a year, I was on antidepressants, trying to do everything in my life to improve my health. I then just fell into the breathwork space.
I'm going to slow you up, because we're going to go straight into breath.
Sorry.
It's amazing. I love where we're kind of bouncing around. I just want to talk about high school quickly. Mm-hmm. You said it was something that you found it quite difficult, because this is something that a lot of people might be able to relate to, that they're, oh, I was lost in high school too. But hey, he found something that he really loves and is passionate about now, so it gives me hope. So what was high school like? You said you went to a private school, brothers, competitive, were you into your sport? What sort of subjects were you into, struggling with dyslexia? Was there the support at the school, or how did you deal with that, having challenges with learning, but then still being in a hyper-competitive situation, having brothers and that kind of life?
Yeah, no, I appreciate going back. I'll dive into that a bit more. Mm-hmm. My older brother, who I love very much, I love all my brothers, but my older brother was the straight A student. He represented the school at many sports and was very academically intelligent. So I always struggled with that. You know, he's 2 years older to the day, actually. Both have the same birthday, but just 2 years apart. So I really struggled seeing that, and, you know, that he was always doing so well and excelling, but then here's me who was getting C's, D's, and E's at school. So I really struggled to understand how to deal with that. So then I guess I rebelled from quite a young age as well. You know, when I was 14, 15, I started smoking. And I thought that would just be cool, hanging out with older people. And I realized how just stupid that was. But when you're young, you just do what you can to fit in and be seen, I guess. Mm-hmm. So... I didn't know what I was going to do at school. You know, to anyone listening, and you know, I know how much work you do at school, so I really hope some of the kids are listening, where I didn't like any subjects. The only ones that I enjoyed were the ones that I was good at, which are PE, you know, physical education. Mm-hmm. I liked things like design technology, where I could make things with my hands, a bit more hands-on. I really struggled with English, with maths, with biology, you know, the sciences. So I started working from quite a young age. I started doing kind of hospitality and catering work when I was about 16. So I really enjoyed that sort of purpose and making money and actually having something that I was good at and I enjoyed. So I think finding something that I could do and I could enjoy really helped. But yeah, school was, if I'm honest, it was a pretty tough time.
Mm.
It was pretty hard.
And then you leave school. Didn't know what you want to do after school, so you're on a gap year. What was the favorite part about your gap year? Obviously, you got to travel to a few different places. You did, yeah. So when you were in Australia on your gap year, you did your personal training certificate. Mm. Uh-huh.
Did that in Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, well, tell me about that gap year. What was that like? And the travel, did you do it with a partner? Did you do it with friends? Did you do it solo? How was that experience?
Yeah, I did it solo. 18 years old, just packed my bags from Edinburgh. Hadn't ever lived anywhere else. So went to the same school from the age of, I think, 6 years old to 18. You know, then I just wanted freedom. I wanted to kind of find out who I was on my own. And I know my parents weren't very excited for me to do it because I was pretty young. But I loved it. You know, I loved the freedom that I had. I loved exploring. I loved traveling. I loved seeing all these different cultures, which I thought was amazing. And it gave me a taste of Australia. You know, then it's funny the way the world and the world works, society works, where it's kind of went full circle, right? You know, I never thought I'd be moving back here and living here, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, it's wild. So you get home after your gap year. Okay, I'm going to go and study in London and do sports science. But then this is also the time where the depression comes in. Tell me about, so what, you started at like 19, 20 at university?
Yeah, 19.
Yeah, so what led to going and seeing a psychologist and being diagnosed with depression, and how hard was that to come to terms with?
So I started uni 19. I was in second year at uni when I was 20, and then third year when I was 21. And third year, I knew things were changing. Anxiety and depression weren't really spoken about in my house or at school at all when I was at school. Was it the same as you?
Yeah, 29, yeah. Same age.
Same, right? So I didn't know what it was. I found myself, when my mum or dad would come down to London, my dad used to come down for work, so I'd catch up and we'd go out for dinner. Mum would come down, we'd hang out, and then when they'd leave, I'd cry. Now, I'm this 21-year-old man, and why am I crying when I'm leaving my parents? What's going on? Then the sadness, the emotion became more and more, and I found myself just kind of crying myself to sleep most nights. And I was thinking, well, this is strange, but I don't know what the heck is going on. So I went to the doctor. My partner at the time said, you need to go and see a doctor. And then the doctor just prescribed me antidepressants, and he was like, yeah, you're depressed, mate. I didn't really comprehend it at the time, so then I just started taking the antidepressants. Didn't really change my lifestyle at that moment, at that time. And after probably a few months of taking the antidepressants, then I was like, right, something else has got to change. Started to change the lifestyle, the behaviors, the patterns, the routines. And then
did the psychologist, when you saw him, give you any other options? Did he say how you're sleeping, eating, relationships, finances, anything else? Or it was just like, oh no, you've got depression, here's this pill?
It wasn't a psychologist at the time, it was a GP.
And
it was very much you know, you can take the antidepressants, and oh, by the way, here's a flyer for CBT, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, that's there as an option, but there's your pills.
Mm.
It wasn't really spoken about. Then I started seeing psychologists and psychiatrists and therapists through my mum's help, mum's support. You know, she helped me and, you know, drove me to people and did all the work kind of with me and for me. So yeah, it kind of took me on that journey when I was about 21, 22 years old, and you know, now we're 29, right?
Yeah. Tell me about the, after 6 months, you've been taking antidepressants. Sounds like maybe not much is really changing. Other parts of your life still need work on. What were the next sort of stages that you took to get better and get yourself into a healthy and happy person again?
one of the reasons that I love podcasts so much and I've been wanting to have a chat with you is because I really believe podcasts helped me get out of the hole that I was in. You know, I started listening to self-help, personal development, and I just changed my mindset. So listening to good people talk about good things that just helped my perspective, my view on life, really helped shape my path and my journey. So things like people like Tony Robbins, people like Ed Milet, you know, I guess Modern Wisdom, Chris Williamson, you know, these sort of people that really helped me get out of the hole. Then exercising a lot more, having a better day-to-day lifestyle, and waking up at a good time, going to bed at a good time, not drinking as much, not partying as much in London, you know, just reshaping the life to, you know, you said it earlier, but living life by design, not by default. You know, if I do what I've always done, I'll get where I've always got, you know. So you just gotta shape and shake things up just to suit you and to suit me and suit my life, because, you know, it's me against me, right?
Yeah. So what were you doing for work here? You kind of dealing with depression, you got a uni degree that you're probably getting very close to finishing. What did you think after uni work was going to look like? Where did you want to go? What sort of industry did you think you were going to find yourself in? Started to get a bit on top of your depression by changing your lifestyle as well as antidepressants. Are you still on antidepressants?
No, I only took them for about a year.
That was the next question to be. What got you off antidepressants? What led to that? And what was life like post uni? Where'd you go once you finished that uni degree? Or did you finish the uni degree?
Yeah, no, I did. My dissertation got published, actually.
Good on you.
So I'll show you that after.
Yes.
I put so much pressure on myself at uni because I pretty much flogged school. Went to a school that cost a lot of money, and I thought, I've just fucked this all up.
But dyslexia, did you get?
Well, I got overcome support.
That. Yeah,
you got. I got support. A bit of support, but I just put so much time into university,
yeah.
and I buried myself in the library. I wanted to get a 2-1 overall. I'm not sure if it's the same grades here in Australia, but a 2-1 overall, and I wanted the first in my dissertation. I wanted to get published, and I got that. So it's almost like the confirmation bias, right?
Yeah.
But is it a positive or negative confirmation bias where I worked my ass off for something, I got that thing, but then the depression got horrific. So after uni, I thought I was going to be a strength and conditioning coach, work in professional sport, rugby, whatever it may be. Then all my friends were moving into the corporate world. I realized that in professional sport, in your first year moving into it as an S&C coach, you get paid peanuts and it's not enough to even live in London. So it wasn't really feasible financially. Then I saw everyone going into corporate. So I thought, well, you know, that's worked for my friends, worked for my family. Well, maybe I just do that too then. Worked in consumer goods sales for a coconut water brand for a few years, account management. And I just, you know, it was fine at times. I find it quite exciting. I like the brand aspect and like selling, but I didn't really have much purpose and passion with it. It wasn't really my thing.
Did you feel like pissed off? Not pissed off, but like, oh, I've done this full degree. I always struggle when I see somebody do like a multiple year degree and then go and do a job that doesn't use a degree. I'm just like,
yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think, you know,
having it across all your life.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, and again, the whole full circle thing where with that 3-year degree, I now use it so much. As I talk about, you know, the physiology within the body, within respiration, talk about nervous system, you know, with the running that I do, I understand biomechanics, I understand the muscles in the body. So, you know, I'm grateful that I did it. At the time when I moved in corporate, it served me in zero purpose at the time, but now I'm happy I did it. But it's funny the way the world works.
Yeah, so corporate, coconut water for a couple of years, account management, making that all happen. When does breathwork come into your life?
Yeah, breathwork was 2018. I went to a breathwork session, which was recommended to go by an ex-girlfriend. We did this session and I had an out-of-body experience. It was one of the best moments of my life. I remember I just sat up on the mat. We just looked at each other and I just smiled. Now, I was in a pretty low moment, low time in my life. Still on antidepressants at this time. You know, so I just started smiling and I was like, I've never felt like this ever. You know, the joy, the calmness, the clearness, the happiness, the strength, the power. You know, being an emotional man, as someone who used to cry a lot and still does cry quite a bit, you know, I'd never felt that much joy and so full. So then I became hooked, became obsessed, started going to, you know, 3 or 4 sessions a week in London, just practicing all the time. And I was like, this is working. So then I stopped taking the antidepressants, changed the lifestyle, was practicing breathwork all the time. And you know, then I came to Australia and was like, well, could I go full time into breathwork, or do I go back into the world of consumer goods, corporate, and, you know, sell my soul for another how many years? And I chose the former.
Yeah. So let's talk about the education that comes with breathwork, what that period was like from learning about breathwork, educating yourself enough to be able to teach it and start a business in it, and at the same time transitioning out of working in a corporate role and moving countries. Obviously very multifaceted, but talk me through that period, the 12 months before coming to Australia, what it took education-wise, leaving your job, how difficult was that?
Yeah, a bit going on, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very multifaceted question, but you get the gist.
No,
did you transition and get to Australia?
No, it's a great question.
Then we'll go deeper into the breathwork side of stuff. I just wanted to spend 20 minutes setting up your story, and then we can get some good science and stuff, and we'll also talk about your running. But yeah, tell me that chapter from finding out about breathwork to getting to Australia.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that I just haven't really thought about that year for a while. So I left a full-time role in consumer goods. I had a fairly good network in London, and I started freelancing for 2 or 3 different brands. At that moment, I was charging a daily rate, and I was working 3 days as opposed to 5 days. So I was working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I was getting paid more for the 3 days than 5 day work. So that also gave me a bit of a taste of freedom. And I thought, so I can just work 3 days and get paid more money working 3 days and 5 days, and I can use Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to work on myself, work on my own health. I was doing online courses. I did online courses with Yale, did online courses with Harvard.
You did the science of well-being. I did that.
I did that. I remember sitting in cafes and pubs in London with my laptop and doing these courses. So I spent that time just to upskill and just to learn about the brain, the body, you know, mindset. And then when my ex and I decided to make the jump and come to Australia, we thought, well, where is my happiness and what do I love? And I knew I wanted to move into the breathwork space.
Wow. And then what was the education to get into becoming a breathwork instructor? Because there's so many different versions of breathwork. What was the one that you first got introduced to?
The first was was Wim Hof.
Yeah.
You know, that was the gateway, right? Then I looked into Oxygen Advantage. So I'm certified with Patrick McCoon and the Oxygen Advantage. I do a little bit of that, but so much of my practice and what I coach, guide, host, facilitate is very much from experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done this for 5 or 6 years now. I've worked with a huge range of clients, patients, teams, businesses, and I've explored so many different methods, modes, modalities of breathing. And over time you get subjective and objective measurements, right? And I find what works. So, you know, my style isn't Wim Hof. It's not holotropics, not rebirth. It's my own way of doing it. Mm. You know, and I think the augmented effect of the science of sound, so the music that I play, plus the evidence-based breathwork for the process to create the overall outcome is quite powerful. Mm. And you probably noticed that this morning with the music, right? And
yeah, I love your sessions. Your sessions are fun. It's like, you feel like, yeah, the different songs that you put on, just feels like you're in this journey. It takes you like to this whole new space. So yeah, you're one of the only ones that I've had the music the way you do it. It definitely takes you on quite the journey.
No, and I appreciate you noticing that. And I put a lot of time, effort into finding the right tracks. And, you know, we even spoke earlier about working with one of my good friends, Stu, from one half of Setmo, you know, to create unique music, unique sounds in the studio. So we're creating, you know, certain signs for certain brain waves to tap into to relaxation response, and there's so much that can be done with sound. But often what I found as a guest or as a participant when I went to breathwork sessions, it was very shamanic, and I think that's quite old school. That's quite old fashioned. What, you know, breathwork is mainstream now. It's up and coming. You know, it's not up and coming. It's actually mainstream, should I say? Yeah. So why are we still doing it the way it used to be done?
Doesn't need the spiritual connotation to it.
No, nah,
there's a barrier to entry for a lot of people.
100%, mate. You know, some of the we're working with Google, Amazon, Canva, LinkedIn, BBC, Uber. You know, if you go to all these companies and with a bongo drum, you know, people are going to look at you like, who's this kid? So I don't know. I try and make it modern, play some music that people enjoy, people can connect with, and have a bit more emotion and emotive to it.
Mm. We're going to come into the science just shortly, but I want to talk about now this period. You moved to Australia. This is something that people might be able to relate to if they're like kind of traveling, wanting to set up life over in another country. How'd you find that transition, getting to a country, having to build a community? I'm guessing that's why doing that men's mentor thing, how you met me, like it's crazy. I think people can be inspired by maybe, let's talk about 2020, because we all know something else happened in 2020, which changed everyone's life. So what was that like 2019, 2020 for you, trying to set up a new life, partner, business, new business,
dog
in a new space, dog. Did you bring your dog over from the UK?
No, got him here during COVID.
Okay. Yeah, he needed support. Yeah. So yeah, tell me that period, how that was.
Yeah, I mean, coming over with very little network. You know, I have some of my family here, but you know, no friends. I had no job, no idea what I was going to be doing. That's very confronting, and it's very hard, and it's very scary and challenging. But you know, we knew we wanted the lifestyle here, and that comes with challenge, right? Again, trying to start a breathing business during a global pandemic that involves respiration is also another challenge, you know, with the lungs and breathing and all the rest of it. So yeah, it was hard, but I think what I really led into was community. So I tried to do as much as I could with mentorship programs, you know, with, you know, Nimbus, for example, is a sauna business in Bondi. And we did a lot of online breath work during COVID. You know, I started hosting all these online sessions, you know, nearly daily. And sometimes I have 500 people join, you know. And so, you know, because people had time and people wanted to look after their health in a very strange, paradoxical way for breath work and for my business, COVID was a good time.
Same.
You know, in a strange way, right?
And I don't, mental health business.
Oh, mate. Like, and I don't feel comfortable saying that. But if we can support people when they need supported, fantastic. But it's just sad that people need to be supported. Yeah. But, you know, 10 people join a session. You know, I remember you and Alex joining a session at one point as well. You know, 10 people join a session, those people tell three of their mates, you know, just spread. Yeah. And I think the uniqueness of a Scottish voice in Australia and the music that I play, you know, people gravitate towards it.
Mm. Yeah, it's been so cool to watch the journey and watch you grow and see you pop up and just like we have so many overlaps in like different little ways. Yeah, it's been really cool to see the growth. I want to talk about breathwork now a bit. I didn't know that you had a degree in sports science as well. So you can probably talk to this. I mean, I'm not going to discount anyone else. I've had some amazing breathwork coaches on the podcast, but let's talk a little bit about the science behind it. For someone who's first time, like I keep hearing about this bloody breathwork. What's going on? Why is it actually helping us from the scientific side of it physiologically?
Hmm. Well, I think that's
in the easiest way you can, like, you know, you
yeah,
explain
yeah,
it. Because I know you've explained it very well quite a lot of times when you intro your breathwork sessions, you do it quite well in a way that's digestible. Maybe just give a sort of bit of a spiel. If someone's like, okay, why should I do breathwork? What's it doing for me?
So you can look at it in a few ways. Think of breathwork as a reactive or proactive tool. You know, you can use specific breathing techniques in times of stress in real time to find more calm, to feel more relaxed. You know, Kips, how do we feel when we feel stressed and anxious? The heart rate increases, respiration rate increases, your breathing rate increases. It feels unpleasant. Cortisol increases, adrenaline. But if you can consciously decide, choose how you breathe, to breathe slower, you know, like the practice you did today, a 4-second inhale with a 6-second exhale, by lengthening that exhale, that'll help you move into more down-regulated, relaxed state. So it's using the breath essentially as an on-off switch, like for the lights, to slow the breath down. You're switching off the nervous system to bring it down to more relaxed parasympathetic state. So that's reactive, but also using it proactively. You know, we breathe over 25,000 times a day. So if you're breathing 25,000 dysfunctional suboptimal breaths, it'll have a lot of detrimental effects to mental health and your physical health. But if you can understand, practice, learn how to optimize those 25,000 breaths by using the nose, by breathing slower, by breathing deeper, this will actually help bring more oxygen into the tissues, binding to hemoglobin, making its way into the working tissues. This will help improve your lung volume. This will help improve your diaphragm function, that large breathing muscle, which you mentioned as well this morning. So there's a huge amount of benefits. You know, we have 12 internal systems. And often when we think of human development, you know, you as a surfer, as an athlete, we give a lot of attention to our muscular system, our skeletal system, our cardiovascular system. Those are three systems. But we often neglect respiration, which is breathing, and in your central nervous system. Mm. So what I focus on is how can we use these two systems together, respiration system, breathing, central nervous system, which in that is your autonomic nervous system, to help us become more efficient and more effective humans. Mm-hmm. You know, I call those two the forgotten systems. Mm. So using the forgotten systems to be more human, essentially.
I love that. It's like the breathing is such an interesting one. It's so automatic for everyone that we think, oh, okay, we're just breathing. But there's a right and a wrong way to do it. Or not a right and a wrong way to do it. There's a way that's beneficial for you and a way that's detrimental for you. And that's what I've learned from so many different industries now, whether it be Nigel Beach back on episode 111 of the podcast, talking about all different things and how it affects the body. But one of the big things we spoke about was the breath, and especially breathing through the nose and all the different functions that our nose have. I'm like, why do we not get taught this at school? Like, this should be the first thing that we get taught when we're 5 years old. Hey guys, we breathe through our nose because it's got all these different functions that our nose was designed for as humans. And because our food's gotten softer, there's so many reasons why we've begun to breathe through our mouth. It's not our fault, but it is our responsibility to start to take back control. And it comes back to our breath. And another guest I had on, Rohan, I can't think of his last name, the dentist. Anyway, he was fascinating talking about how so many dental problems come from our breath. The reason like we're getting, he's like, you should never have teeth ripped out of your mouth. That's because when we breathe through our mouth, it's shrinking our mouth. We're not chewing as much. So the muscles in our face are getting smaller. So our faces are smaller. All these different cascading effects have such a negative effect on our health. And it all comes back to our breath. That's why it's so beautiful, not only doing the breath work as a practice, but also understanding the baseline breath.
Well, it's the fundamentals and the basics, right?
Yeah. Do you want to give maybe from someone who understands breath really well, someone who's breathing day to day, not even breath work, what would be the correct way to breathe?
Yeah, an optimal functional breath would be through the nose, as you mentioned, breathing light, breathing slow, and breathing deep. So a light breath is the opposite of a heavy breath. A heavy breath is this. So a light breath is...
Can't hear it.
Hard to see and hard to explain, right? So a light breath, slow, slowing the rhythm down, the cadence of the breath, so reducing the respiration rates, how many breaths that you take per minute, and then breathing deep into the lungs. You know, we have the highest concentration of alveoli, so gas exchange takes place, deep in the lower lobes of our lungs. So if you're breathing too short, shallow, fast upper chest, a lot of that oxygen gets stuck in dead space and it doesn't actually absorb into the working tissues and you breathe it right back out. Mm-hmm. So breathing light, breathing slow, and breathing deep is so important. You know, again, Coops, as you mentioned there, where because it's an automatic, subconscious, involuntary action that we do every second of every day, people just assume, and I was one of those people as well before I read all the research, you know, that you breathe and it does its thing, right? But you can compare it to nutrition, food. You know, you can choose to breathe, you can choose to eat in a more optimal way, or you can choose to eat in a shit way. Now, I'm sure, and I'm not a nutritionist, so sorry if any nutritionists are listening, I'm sure you could survive on 3 slices of pizza and 2 donuts every day. You can survive, but it's not going to optimize your health. Mm. You know, you and I can survive by breathing in a dysfunctional way, but it's not going to optimize our health. Mm. So the more you can breathe in an optimal way, it can help optimize how you think, feel, act, and behave.
I love that. It's such an important thing. And like you said, like we do it all day, every day, but doing it in a way that's actually beneficial for us is so important. That's why I think it's so awesome to see people like yourself who are not only educating on the breath work as a practice for the different benefits we get from that, but then also how to breathe correctly every single day of our life, because that's what we do all day, every day.
And this is so much, and I appreciate you saying that, and this is so much of the work that I do with the athletes as well. When I work with athletes, we strip it right back to basics. You know, how are you walking before you're running? You know, so how are they breathing at rest, you know, during wakefulness and during sleep? Then we can move into more snazzy, trendy techniques. Like why go into something full on deep when you're not even doing the basics right? You know, so start with the foundation, start with the basics, then like in athletic development, progressive overload, then increase intensity, duration, frequency, volume.
What about for the person sitting there right now, driving in their car, and they're like, I don't really know if I'm breathing right or wrong. What are some of the symptoms of somebody who is breathing, let's say, incorrectly or not in a way that's beneficial or maximizing their breath?
Well, here's one. You know, if you're not driving, you can give us a go. But if you're driving, just keep the eyes open, please. But just, you know, do a minute of breath awareness. So you can even do it now, Coops, as well. So just understanding how you're breathing in this moment is is a key to development. So closing your eyes. Eyes are closed. We'll just do about 1 minute here. And as you're breathing in this moment, just noticing if you're breathing high into the chest or if you're breathing low into your belly. And just noticing if the breath feels fast or if the breath feels slow. Noticing if the breath gets stuck anywhere or if it feels smooth, regular, controlled. At the end of the exhale, do you notice a natural pause? Or is there a sense of urgency to bring the breath back in? Are you breathing through your nose or are you breathing through your mouth? And hopefully now you're understanding there's a lot more to the breath than simply air in and air out. That's the best place to start. Breath awareness.
Amazing. So we went through a couple of things there. We've kind of touched on them already. But I guess you kind of already said slow, soft, deep, yeah, light, down to your belly.
Light, slow and deep. LSD. Not fun stuff. The other stuff. Yeah, LSD. And another thing that people often think about is often you can hear someone breathing beside you, but the breath should always be quiet. Always be quiet. Light, quiet, gentle, relaxed. You know, shouldn't be heavy.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be up chest. Just relax. And even when you're running as well, you know, when people are running, it's always...
Just broke the marathon world record, breathing strictly nose breath the whole way. Like people trip on that, the chick, I'm pretty sure. I read
always a note through the nose, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like so interesting. And unless you get told that, and I feel like I kind of blab on it about quite a bit in my podcast, but it's so important. It's so important that people start to continually get that information so then they can spread it to their community. Like you see a friend and they're breathing through their mouth, go, hey, you should look into why you should breathe through your nose. It's like, it's changed my life. Like I track all my sleep. And since taping my mouth shut, for one, I wake up with no claggy, shitty mouth, which is the worst. No bad breath for my girlfriend.
No,
I can actually get a morning kiss when I peel the tape off. But it's, it's scientifically, I track my sleep and it's improved my sleep like 10 to 12% most nights. So there's such a big impact. And one of the greatest things I learned, because I was like, oh, well, how's it going to really change? And I learned that when you're sleeping and you breathe through your mouth, even if it doesn't wake you up and you go like do this kind of weird catching your breath on your throat, it jumps you out of like your REM sleep or out of your deep sleep, which is where we get our healing, and you kind of have to start the sleep cycle again. So it's like these little things that you don't even realize that are happening at every moment of every day. And the more that we can train this breath, the better off it is. What's your take on mouth taping and sort of sleeping at night, trying to get it through the nose?
Yeah, it's life-changing.
Mm.
You know, we bang on about nasal breathing. And if you then have a choice of how you breathe for 8 hours when you're in bed, you know, if you're breathing for 8 hours in a dysfunctional, suboptimal way through the mouth, you know, it's detrimental to sleep apnea, you know, your sleep quality as well. It'll increase stress. You wake up with a dry mouth. You just feel horrible. You know, if a simple hack, for no better word, a little tool, just to tape your mouth closed, you know, it's life-changing. And the amount of individuals that I've spoken to about this who said to me, man, I didn't know it'd make that much of a difference. And I'm blown away.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And I even spoke to a lady earlier this morning and she laughed. You know, I said,
yeah, hey, everyone
just
does.
Just tape your mouth. She's like, nah. I was like, no, I'm being serious. And this is what I help people with this daily, you know, and give it a go and see how you feel.
Mm. And that's what anyone listening, give it a go and see how you feel. There's, I mean, you maybe not duct tape, but you can get like medical paper sort of tape. What sort of tape do you recommend? There's a lot of brands out there now that do it. I got given some recently that have like a hole in the mouth so you can still breathe through your mouth.
Yeah, Myo tape is that one. There's another one, Somnifix is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd recommend is if you're watching TV at night, you know, people listening, if you're watching TV at night, you know, put the tape over the mouth when you're awake so you can get used to it. So you're breathing through your nose and finding a bit more comfort in it, as opposed to lying down in your bed, closing your eyes, then putting the tape on, because it can be a little bit strange at first.
Yeah.
So practice, you know, for an hour, practice. So put it on, practice it, you know, before you go to bed, watching TV, take it off, do your teeth, get a little good night kiss, put it back on, and then go to bed.
Mm. Perfect little schedule. I think, anyone listening, that's like one of the simplest ways to kind of get a ton, like the biggest benefits without really having to do much. It's just literally taping your mouth.
And I love that, man. It's, you know, minimal effective dose, right?
Yeah.
You know, least amount of effort for the most amount of gain and benefit. It's not hard. It's not difficult. You know, we do enough hard things in life, enough stressful things. One little bit of tape over your lips to change your life the next day. Incredible. Yeah.
If you do it and you're listening to this podcast right now, send me a photo to at Cooper Chapman. I'd love to see how silly you look, because I do it every night and look really silly. But
get it on the Instagram and tag us both.
Yeah, tag us up. Put on your story and tag both myself and Rory. Both will be in the show notes to hear more about that. Another thing that I love talking about, we're going to come back to maybe a little bit of breath about what you got coming up and how people can get involved. I know you got some amazing tunes coming out, like you said before, with one of the boys from Setmo. But another thing that you do that fascinates me is running. You're an ultra marathon runner. Ultra marathon, for anyone listening who doesn't know what it is 100, I mean, just really long distance runs.
Is anything over a marathon?
Anything over a marathon is an ultra. Tell me what got you into running. What do you get out of running? And then let's talk about one or two of the races that you've been on and the challenges you faced. Because I know you did like a crazy 5-day long one or something in Chile or something crazy.
Yeah, 250K.
Yeah, 250, yeah, far out. So yeah, tell me about what got you into running. What draws you to it?
Back in 2020, during COVID, I was running 5K, 10K here and there, nothing hectic. And I was posting on Instagram about nasal breathing whilst running. A running coach who followed me, who's also based in Bondi, messaged me saying, I like what you're talking about. There's a lot of science in this. I've been doing research too. Do you want to grab a coffee and chat about it? I was like, yeah, cool. Let's talk about nasal breathing. So we hung out. And then he told me he was running this 100-kilometer race in the Blue Mountains outside of Sydney. I thought, wow, that's amazing. You sound crazy. He said, well, why don't you do it as well? I said, I couldn't do that. I've only ran a half marathon in Brighton in the UK. I wouldn't be able to run 100 kilometers. You know, I'll coach you. You know, coach you for 3 or 4 months and you'll do it. 3 or 4 months later, I ran my first 100-kilometer race. I fell in love with it. It was about 14 hours, about 13 and a half hours, running from daylight to darkness to into the night, head torch on. One of the most challenging but euphoric days of my life. I remember in the car on the way home, you know, I thought I was going to be ticking a box. You know, I ran an ultramarathon, let's tick the box, swam the sharks, all the rest of it. But then, you know, in the car on the way home, I was looking at more races. I said, you know, I could probably do this. So, you know, I ran 100 kilometers through Blue Mountains. I ran 50 kilometers. I ran Bondi to Manly, Bondi to Pami. I ran 250 kilometers through the Atacama Desert.
Tell me about that. We're not just going to skip over a 250 kilometer one in the Atacama Desert. Where's the Atacama Desert? How did that race come about and what did the prep look like? Because we were talking about it at Riggs before and you were saying I could only have, because doing that, you can got to run and you're not like sleeping just in a hotel in a nice with your travel bag. You got to run with what you're going to survive on for a week. So yeah, tell me about that race, how you found out about it, what the training looked like. And then yeah, that race, talk me through a few of those days.
Yeah, I mean, to give the background, so it's a 6-day self-sufficient 250-kilometer foot race through the Atacama Desert in Chile. So it's, you know, I think it got to -5 during the night and 40 degrees during the day. So cold, frozen, cold nights and then very hot days. The first day is at altitude as well, so that's pretty challenging. Day one, my bag weighed about 14, 15 kilos. The prep was about 4 months of just training hard, loads of running. Obviously, sleep was a big part of my recovery for all the obvious reasons. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, I went in blind, never ran a multi-day race like this. I think there's about 200 people racing and I ended up coming about 11th in it. So I think that was that solidified that I could do this. Now I could actually compete to a decent level, but I don't do this for anyone else. I think to go back to one of your questions earlier where, you know, why I run is, you know, so much in life, we're in our own heads, right? You know, what was the stat you said earlier, Coops, about
how many 6,000 thoughts a day, 75% are generally negative, 95% are generally repetitive.
Yeah, so I reckon a lot more of my thoughts are negative.
More than 75%.
Oh, mate, like I'm a complete arsehole to myself, you know, and one of the only times that I feel strong, I feel empowered, I feel capable and worthy in this life in the world is when I prove to myself that I can, you know, training my ass off for a race. Then when I finish the race, you know, it's not me against anyone else. I don't care about anyone else. It's me against me. knowing that I can do what I've set out to do. So that's what I do. It's all mental. It's all for strengthening my resilience and to prove to myself that I am worthy.
Wow. So 6 day race, you come 11th. What was the hardest moment? Give me a moment where you're like, fuck this. Cause I mean, it's hard now. You look at like the Ned Brockman journey and stuff and yeah, I've read his book. I read that book in a couple of days, like listening to what he went through. It's obviously a little bit of a different scale and a different journey, but 6 day race by yourself, all self-sufficient. Like, do you sleep in a swag on the side of wherever you feel like going to sleep and then wake up early to like start running? Do you have a set finish time, set wake up time? Like, what does it look like?
So you run camp one to camp two.
Okay.
Then everyone starts at the same time, 8 a.m. from camp two, you run to camp three, everyone starts at the same time. So your time is calculated throughout the stages. It's all staged.
Yeah.
But because I've done, you know, multi-day races and, you know, I know Ned and, you know, it makes me respect people that do these sort of challenges so much more. You know, on day three, you know, you asked about my most challenging time or the hardest part. Day three, I woke up in the tent. I was lying in the tent. The sun was coming in. I was absolutely boiling. I can't hide from it. So it's just boiling. You know what it's like when the sun's on a tent. Mm. And I lay there. I was waiting. You know, we share a tent with 8 other people. So you got all these other randomers that you've never met. You're sleeping in a tent with. It's a bit stranger as well. I was lying there and then I had a bit of a wobble. I don't think I cried, but I had a bit of a wobble thinking, the fuck are you doing, man? Like, you know, it was September last year. You know, it's coming into summer. All your mates are just chilling in Bondi, chilling in Australia. And here's you flying to Chile on your own to run through the desert for 6 days. Like, what are you doing? And I remember I was just lying there. I was like, you are honestly, you've lost your mind. And then that was the most challenging part, you know, just, because it was so confronting, it was so new. It was hard. It was effort. Waking up in the morning, it's freezing cold. Having to go out to Portaloo to do your business, you know, eating, you know, rations. Like, you know, all we got was hot water, cold water in a tent. So everything in my bag were these like kind of sachets. So you got boiling water, you pour it in, and you just kind of eat that 2 meals a day, 800 calories per meal. So eating 1600 calories plus gels plus all the rest of it. So just confronting, I'm passionate about doing hard things because the life that we live is very comfortable a lot of the time. And I think doing hard things makes us more resilient and stronger. And that's why I keep trying to find, you know, more exciting races, plus to run in fun places. Mm. And then you ask, what kind of, why Chile and how did you find it? You know, I have a long list of these different races all over the world. You know, I'm racing next year in Utah in the US, 100 kilometers, racing 200 kilometers in you know, just off the border of China as well. So just finding these amazing, cool places that I want to go visit, and just trying to live a big life.
Mate, it just fascinates me. Like, getting to travel and do that is like one thing, but people go on holidays to go and relax and to go and chill out, and you're just going on these holidays to go and run for ages and just build differently. But I respect it so much. I think it gives such... just gives you purpose, gives you something to work towards. And I feel like as much as we're both hustling and got businesses we're trying to build and help people, it's doing something for yourself. And to be honest, I feel like that's something I'm really missing. And we're talking about that earlier today. I was like, you know what? I need to sign up for something next year that's going to give me a bit of something to work towards. Is that a big reason why for you to keep you focused on a purpose and something bigger than yourself?
Massively. Bro, like, yeah, it's huge. You know, so much of my work is, and you know, you can probably relate to this, so much of our work is giving to others, which I love, but you know, I've got to fill my cup too. Mm. You know, if I don't fill my cup and make sure that I'm okay and I'm happy and healthy, then how can I provide to other people?
Mm.
And running is that purpose, you know, and I don't want to drink all the time. I don't want to go out late. And when I have a strict schedule and working with my coach, you know, knowing what days I'm running, how far I have to run each run, what is the intent, the purpose of each run, you know, I'm focused, I'm fucking dialed in, and I'm sorry, I can't swear.
You can swear.
And you know, and I'm just laser focused, and I love that. I find that so exciting. You know, to put all your effort into this competition that you have coming up, you know, 3 months, you know, can't, you know, yes, the race is one part of it, but the training is a huge part of it. And it's sacrifice. You know, the bigger the sacrifice, the bigger the reward. How much am I willing to sacrifice? Social events, you know, weddings or birthdays, whatever it is, because I have to focus and I have to race.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. So the big question is, what race am I signing up to next year? Is there something towards the end of next year that I could like work towards? Or when's the Blue Mountains on?
Man, that's in May. I think it's the 9th or 10th of May.
Let's do the 10th of May. It's my birthday.
Is it?
Yeah.
Bro, we're in. So
if it's the 10th of May, I'll lock it in with you and we'll run 100 miles. Well, no, 100K, no, no, or you're away.
No, I've done 100. I've done the 50. So I'm going to do the 20 this year. So I've done all three races. But you have to do the 100.
Okay.
Well, you can do 100 because I think it's 2 days after, I can crew you.
Oh, okay.
So I can be at every checkpoint for you.
Oh, that's sick.
And then I can help you, and I can give you your fuel, and I can just make sure you're good.
All right, let's do it. I'll hold you. Everyone.
No, I'll hold you, mate.
Yeah, you hold me to it, but the podcast will hold me accountable.
Mate, so hey, what about training? 100K in May.
100K in May. Let's go. On my birthday.
Let's go.
30th birthday. New chapter.
Mate, this is 30. Big. You're gonna cry.
I am going to cry.
Mate, it'll be big.
I'm scared thinking about it. I'm pumped for you. What's the training look like? Give me a bit of a heads up. What does my next 6 months look like if I want to do 100K without killing myself? I mean, I ran the marathon at Gold Coast with zero training the next day and got through it. What does it look like? What's the difference between 100? It's obviously a completely different beast to running a marathon. What's my next 6 months of training going to look like?
Well, a key part of the 100K in the Blue Mountains is also elevation. It's 5K of elevation. A lot of it is just like hiking and hills. You know, the last little push, the last kilometer is 900 stairs.
Oh, that sounds brutal. Getting up the last stairs.
You know, sounds obvious, but just building your load over time, you know, so start running 10K a week to 15K to 20K, you know, start trying to do 80K weeks, you know, work with a coach. I'll put you in touch with my coach, who's great.
Okay.
I'm sure you know people as well, but having a structure and being disciplined on that, you know, and you know, you're an athlete. The more you practice, the more you train, the more you'll enjoy that day.
Yeah.
If you don't train, the day is just going to be brutal, and it won't be fun.
So what's the goal, to get up to 80K weeks?
I reckon right before 80K weeks
is what you want to sort of get to up until,
and then you're conditioning the body, conditioning the joints, conditioning the tendons, the ligaments, the muscles. You'll enjoy it, man. Like, okay. It's such an experience.
All right, mate.
It's therapy.
What? It's almost exactly 6 months to train for it. A week away from 6 months.
I reckon, you know, start running a little bit to build a base, your aerobic base a little bit more than it already is, and then go pretty intense for 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
And you'll crush it.
What? Just try and do like 2 or 3 10K runs a week for the next month or two, and then build it up to 2 or 3 for like 3 or 4 10Ks a week, and build it up to...
Well, you'll do three some
or 15s.
Well, you do, yeah. I mean, but you'll do some shorter runs, you know, some 30-minute runs. Then you'll do maybe a 45-minute run. Then, you know, on the weekend, you'll do a half marathon, 30K runs on the weekend. Yeah. Before I ran a 100-kilometer race, the furthest I'd ran in training was 45K.
Okay.
So I only ran up to 45K.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I was running maybe 5 times in the week. And I was running, say, 45K on a Saturday. Then I'd run a half marathon on Sunday.
So you knew how to
say. So you're kind of going back to back. And, you know, I could run, you know, like a marathon on Saturday and in the mountains, a trail, and then wake up on Sunday and feel good.
Wow. Yeah,
right? Just because your body's conditioned to it, right?
Okay. All right. There's
funny if you train and your body gets used to it.
Yeah, no, far out. I'm used to just like, let's see how we go. But, all right, everyone listening, you're going to be my training buddies. I'll do a podcast a week and I'll let you know what training I've been doing and what it takes to... Fuck, I'm so scared. Bro, I shouldn't do this live on podcast.
You love it.
I did this last year and said I'll go sober for a year, and I did that. So my new challenge... I'm going to run a 100-kilometer race on my birthday.
And I'm going to, on the podcast, I'm going to hold you accountable that when you sign up, you have to screenshot the sign up and then put it on your Instagram.
Okay.
So everyone can see it.
All right. Done. As long as, it's my birthday, so I'm sure I'll have something on. But no, I love that. Thank you for the motivation. I'll do it.
Yes, man.
I'll do it.
I'm pumped.
But man, we're getting pretty close to wrapping this thing up. What have you got coming up? What's exciting? What's the future look like for you? More races, building the breath work. What else you got coming up?
Yeah, you know, most of my time has been with corporates, with athletes and medical clinics, you know, with community at yoga, Pilates, gyms, just supporting people through breathwork sessions, you know, traveling around Australia, doing the keynotes as you and I spoke about. I'm writing a book at the moment as well. So that'll be coming out hopefully next year at some point. Nice. All around breathwork for mental health, physical health, well-being, and overall daily performance, cognitive performance, physical performance. working with Stu Turner, you know, one half of Setmo in the studio to create these breathwork tracks that we're launching as EPs on Spotify. So, you know, a lot of excited things, and then these races, going to the US and then going to China as well. So yeah, just trying to add some positivity into the world, add some value, support people through breathwork, and keep living a wild and wacky life for Mr. Warnock.
Mate, I love it. Where can, if anyone wants to say, do one of your sessions, book you in to come and speak in their corporate group, run one of your breathwork sessions, what's the best spot to connect with you? And do you I've done them with you, but you do like community things that you can just sign up to and do like virtual breathwork sessions as well?
Yeah, I do sporadic online free sessions, you know, just where people from all over the world can jump on and we all just breathe together. But the best place is Rory Warnock _ RoryWarnock_ _ is my Instagram. And then my website is rorywarnock.com and email is rory@rorywarnock.com. So amazing. Yeah, if you want to do corporate sessions, community sessions, if they have a gym, a yoga studio, whatever it may be, just ping me a message on Instagram, ping me a message in my email, and let's chat.
Amazing. Yeah, I'll have all that stuff in the show notes anyway. And hopefully we're going to, once we jump off this podcast, talk about hopefully under the Good Human umbrella, people can find some of the stuff you do as well. So if we want to get you out to some more schools and stuff, I just think it's so valuable, this stuff. Like we've gone on throughout this podcast, we all breathe every single day, but we can all get better at it. And it's a constant journey. It's a constant trying to find little new ways that work better for you, what breath work works for you best, what breathing works best for you, and just trying to get the most out of ourselves, which I love. But man, it's been great to rewind back, get to know the story, learn a bit more about the upbringing and what brought you over here, and yeah, what makes you the man you are today. But the last question I do finish every Good Humans podcast with is the same for everyone. I'm excited to hear your answer for this. What does being a good human mean to Rory Warnock?
A good human to me is someone who is true to themselves, uniquely authentic, will be vulnerable, open, but adds value. You know, I think that word is often front of mind to me, value. You know, how can I help people in the world? And I feel, hopefully, I am a good human as well. So yeah, someone who's uniquely authentic, who's themselves, and someone who can add value.
Mate, I absolutely love that. Beautifully put. As I said, I'll put it all in the show notes. Go check out Rory's stuff. I'm excited to continue our friendship, but also hopefully continue doing some work stuff together in the future. Today was epic doing Mindful Mornings with a rapper. We're going to be bringing more of them. So keep an ear out and an eye out on both of our socials and Drink a Rapper heading into next year. We're going to be doing definitely some more of these Mindful Mornings where people can come see myself and Rory in action doing some guided mindfulness, gratitude, and breathwork sessions. So follow both of us on socials. That'll all be coming to you all next year. But mate, thank you so much for jumping on Good Humans Podcast.
Thank you, brother. Pleasure.
You've got it done.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.